Okay, I'm going to open up the House Education Committee for May 10th, 2017. We're going to go through and have one informational hearing, and then we'll do some work sessions and go back to the second informational. So first thing I do is open up the informational session on Aspire. So if you'd like to come on up, make sure you identify for yourself for the record. And your biggest fan will be here in a moment.
Well, good afternoon. Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Wilson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Juan Baez-Arevalo. I'm the Interim Director of the Office of Student Access and Completion, OSAC. With me today is Gary Campbell, OSAC's Aspire Administrator, and Melinda Dye, Aspire Coordinator at Newport High School. Thank you for the opportunity and invitation to present to you OSAC's Aspire program, an initiative that started back in 1998 with only four school sites. Today, we have over 150 Aspire sites, and Aspire is an acronym. That stands for Access to Student Assistance Programs in Reach of Everyone. Aspire is a program that is for all students as they explore all career and educational options. The success of this program is a reflection of strong local partnerships throughout the state, the work of skilled and highly committed staff at OSAC, and the wonderful volunteers that make the tremendous impact of the lives of thousands of Oregonians across the state. So with a very small budget, OSAC staff, our partners and volunteers throughout the state make the tremendous impact on students. General funds support the partnership grants that OSAC provides to the participating sites throughout the state. And the staff at OSAC, a very small staff group, provide support to the school sites and to the volunteers. We have five part-time staff and four full-time staff, totaling 6.5 FTE. So not a lot of FTE from this program, but a big impact for the work that it does. So Aspire Oregon is a key support structure for all students on their path to a career in post-secondary education. This graphic is a critical reminder to us of the connections of the pre-K to 20 education system and the challenges and opportunities that students face as they go from K-12 to post-secondary education. As students work to complete their K-12 years, they will need to cross the path into career and post-secondary education. As you know, students face many choices and have a confusing array of time-sensitive things to do, from completing the FAFSA, taking time to do the SATs, planning for and paying for higher education or training options, essays to write and deadlines, etc. Such a journey is most difficult for those who are first generation into college or post-secondary training as they have little to no systemic background knowledge at home to support them and guide them through that path. And that's where all those many opportunities to get funding and paying for post-secondary options, as you see on the right-hand side, that's where OSAC comes in as the keystone, if you will, to guide those students to the numerous opportunities that are out there, and funding opportunities, post-secondary options that exist for them. And Aspire bridges the gap by helping students understand what options and resources they have available to them. So Aspire serves as the keystone to support all students as they cross into post-secondary options. And Aspire staff, school sites, and volunteers provide that helping and guiding hand, assisting students by providing them with directions, information, mentoring, and hands-on support as they find their path and discover their passion in the future.
Hi, committee. My name is Gary Campbell. I'm the administrator of the Aspire program. Thank you for your time and your interest today in listening to hear us talk about our program, which we're very proud and excited about. So Aspire is based upon trained volunteers coming to meet with students to talk about those discussions that Juan just discussed. It's really a unique program in that it's meeting the needs of students from all backgrounds. Other programs which address the access issue, like AVID and Gear Up, really support students from specific backgrounds, and Aspire is really focusing on helping all students. And so where Gear Up and AVID do a really good job working with those students from various backgrounds that they work with, Aspire covers students from all backgrounds. We have a lot of our Aspire sites also have AVID and or Gear Up programs, and we think it's a perfect pairing of programs, and we really think it's those other programs provide solid groundwork at those sites. Then Aspire comes in to help meet the needs of other students within those sites and also helps to double the efforts of those programs and make those programs go even further. When our trained volunteers are working with students, they're not just looking at 2- and 4-year degree programs. They're looking at all options, from students interested in going directly into the workforce to students looking at training and certification programs, apprenticeship programs, 2-year, 4-year transfer degree programs. So they're really looking at all the different options there. And then they're helping them to find what option is the best fit for them. And in that process, helping them find the requirements to get into those programs, helping them with the essays, the application materials, to be able to access those programs. They also help work with the students to do the research necessary to find the funding opportunities to help pay for those options. And so that's helping them walk through the scholarship process, looking at local scholarships, statewide scholarships like the OSAC scholarship application, as well as grant opportunities like the Oregon Opportunity Grant, Oregon Promise, and other state and federal grants. And so really that wraparound that the volunteers are providing helps support students in a lot of different ways. Our program helps support the vision of 40-40-20 and helping students access the information so they can better understand the long-term financial impact of their post-secondary decisions. They can receive that help in exploring those options. And again, helping with the application process. So with high school students, often they don't have the soft skills developed quite yet to be able to keep track of deadlines, meeting deadlines, making sure that all the applications that they submit are quality, that they have everything that they need within the applications and are meeting requirements to get in. And so that added support for them really enables them to access those programs. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to Melinda Dye. She's a Aspire coordinator at Newport High School, and she'll talk about her experience in working with the program.
Okay, yes, my name is Melinda Dye, and I've served as an Aspire program coordinator at Newport High School for about 11 years. And when I first started, we had about 3 or 4 mentors and about 5 kids in the program. We currently have 40 mentors, and we have about 200 students in the program. We serve all 9th through 12th grade. My main focus ends up on 11th and 12th graders because they kind of have that emergent thing going on where they want to apply and get scholarships. My goal really is to reach all students, especially those that are not, they don't think they can go to college, their parents haven't gone, they have low grades, they're an unaccompanied minor, a homeless youth. They call me affectionately Mama Dye, and my goal is to really reach those students and to pair them with a mentor that can help them. Some even graduate high school, as they first have to do that before they can kind of go on to the next step. I have several anecdotes about students that have really made a huge difference, this program, in their life. For example, one of the first students was a foster youth, and his mother adopted him, his foster mother, and she became a mentor. But he really wasn't thinking of college or any trade program at all. But since she was in the Aspire Center all the time, he decided to go to windmill training, and so he learned how to work on windmills. And he has a very profitable, good career now, and it's you know, amazing to me because he had no interest at all. And then I also have another student who is a Ford Scholar, and she's a first-generation college student. Parents are immigrants, and she went to Oregon State University. And I provide, the mentors provide that continual support even for students when they go off to college. She called me one night bawling her eyes out, and I reminded her about the mental health resources on campus and that, you know, hey, look at things. And she decided to transfer to University of Oregon because she likes to run. So if that relationship hadn't been built, I think she probably would have just gone home and not continued her education. We had another young lady in our school that was a little wild, uncouth girl who had just moved to town and was kind of off-putting to most people, but we got her a mentor, and she met with that person, and she went to Grand Canyon University in Arizona, and she just graduated this last week in 3 years. She now does beauty pageants for the school that she was at, and it amazes me. This young lady could have ended up like her mother and had in and out of jail, but with this mentor program, it made a huge difference in this young lady's life. I also had a student, he was meeting with his mentor, and he, at the beginning of the year, planning, doing scholarships, all ready to go to college. Then a few months later, I overhear meeting with his mentor, oh, I've decided to travel after high school. I said, really? Where are you going? He said, California. I'm like, what? That's not traveling. He's like, I'm going to surf. I said, okay, let's get on the phone right now. I just want you to go and visit Oregon State Cascades. I think you'll like that campus. Called up. We got on the phone. He had an interview on Monday. Went there. He's there. He loves his program. He's doing outdoor leadership. So finding the right fit is a huge plus for these students. And that would not have happened if he wasn't meeting with a mentor. He would have ended up not going to college. And then also this year, I have a student that's first generation immigrant family, and her brothers in and out of jail, you know, kind of the same road. When she was younger, she didn't have the best grades. Now she has all A's her senior year, and she's so proud. And she did a wonderful job shadow at the hospital, did all the paperwork to do that with the HEPA laws. And it wouldn't have happened if we didn't have Aspire, because she had that support. And she's going to go to nursing school at Oregon Coast Community College. Another wonderful thing about our program is I've been able to recruit people to do scholarships. This year, I've added about 5 scholarships: the Rising Star, First Generation, a NOAA scholarship, the Newport Police Department, a teaching scholarship. I have a student that graduated from Newport High School. He's 25 now. He fishes, but his twin brother is going to school to be a teacher. He's from Ghana. He was adopted and came to this country because of war, and he does his own scholarship to a tune of $1,000 a year for anybody that's going to go to school to be a teacher. Our program makes a huge difference at our school. Last year, we had 51 seniors get $700,000 in local scholarship money. That's not the FAFSA. That's not money from the schools. That's not grants. That is scholarship money, and it's because of this program and the work that our mentors do with these students. Even if they don't do it when they're in high school, they know where to get help. They find me on Facebook, and I get them help even after they've graduated, because Mama Di wants to make sure that everybody has a plan and is able to be successful in life. Thank you.
Representative Springer, would you like to speak from here or go down there? What would you prefer
what
to do?
What is your preference, Madam Chair?
Whatever you would like.
I'll stay here. They don't have room. thank you.
And for the record, you are?
Her. Sherry Springer, State Rep, House District 17. And so I'm supposed to talk about my experience volunteering. Do I have 30, 40 minutes?
Oh, you have about 4 or 5.
I started, I don't know, it's been a few years now, volunteering for Aspire when our son was a freshman in high school, and I heard they had this program, and I thought it would be really good for him. And so I said, sure, I'll volunteer too. And first of all, he didn't sign up for Aspire, But my first year,
well, that's because his mom was there.
Well, no, I said sign up with somebody else.
Oh, okay.
And they gave me 19 kids, mm-hmm. which is probably, it's kind of breaking an Aspire rule. So I had 19 freshmen that showed up the first time. And let me start with the training is clear and convenient for Aspire. It was sit at home online, and I thought, well, I can just hit play and then go do what I want to do, and it'll do its thing, and then I look like I covered the training. The training's of value. Mm-hmm. I used that training last week with somebody, and I'm not an active Aspire volunteer right now. So all those pieces came in play. The 19 freshmen came in, and with freshmen, you don't talk about what do you want to be when you grow up, or what college do you want to attend. You just start opening their eyes to opportunities. And so use that as an avenue to bring in guest speakers. We got some phenomenal guest speakers. It was pretty cool. And talking about what their options are. And so the conversations at that point I would have would be, let's figure out what you like to do, and then let's see if there's a way to make money doing it. Because what a great thing in life, mm-hmm. to make money doing what you love to do, able to support yourself and make that a career. So we talked about those kinds of things. An interesting brief story that occurred, then it evolved into the counselor steered certain kids towards me to work with the next year that I came in. And she would steer certain kids, and she steered this one particular girl who signed up because it got her out of class. And I'd ask the kids, are you here because you're out of class or you want to get something out of it? About half would say, gets me out of class. Fine, I can work with that. And half would say, I'm here because I want to be here. I think that half maybe lied. But I really do. But so anyway, the gal came, and she had her arms crossed, and she wasn't thrilled about being there. And we spent first couple times building a relationship. And that's what Aspire is. It's about the relationship. Aspire offers nothing that's exclusively offered by Aspire. There's nothing Aspire owns. You don't copyright any of your stuff. So there's no rocket science. And so it was building a relationship. And then we started building a relationship. And then it was either her or the counselor said, well, her mom wants to come with her. And I thought, okay, they don't trust what I'm doing. That's fine. Good. Engage parents. I don't believe that's why mom was there. Mom mm-hmm. came to most every Aspire meeting and engaged in the mom who didn't go to college, mm-hmm. mom who didn't have a job, engaged in the conversations. Not this is what my daughter needs type of conversation, mm-hmm. but what can we do type of conversation. And that's the beauty of Aspire. And like I said, I use those skills. I'm not an Aspire volunteer right now because session makes it incredibly difficult. And I popped in and out for a few years, and it dawned on me popping in and out mm-hmm. served my ego well, but it didn't serve kids well. And so I quit popping in and out. But kids still come to me and say, this gal graduated 2 years ago and talked to me here a while back and saw me in a store that she was working at and said, can we sit down? I can't figure out my next step. Mm-hmm. This is about relationships. It's about growing our kids and helping them discover what they want to do. And they don't have a clue. They don't have a clue. One girl told me she wanted to go to this college. I don't remember the name. I don't even know if it really existed. She says, yes, it's really expensive. It's $500 a month. And I didn't say, that's not how college works. I said, you know what? Let's talk about how much school costs and mm-hmm. how we pay for it. It's just phenomenal. And I give this pitch every time, and I'm going to give it, and I'm probably more than 4 minutes, but I don't care. You wouldn't gavel down Aspire anyway.
No, because you'd come get me.
So legislators, whether we can or we can't, show up in that classroom, and nobody
Nobody, and here's where I get to be the pushy broad, nobody can justify not reaching out to the key communicators and the leaders in their community and doing a little arm twisting and getting them in as Aspire volunteers. Mm-hmm. I had a local CPA. I had the administrator of the hospital coming in on a regular basis, the executive director of the school of the Boys and Girls Club. A lot of folks who didn't think they had time, but guess what? They found they had mm-hmm. time. We have that ability to get them in there and plugged into the kids. And I've never have had one of those people come to me and say, I wish you wouldn't have done that. Mm-hmm. It's a cool program.
Yeah. Did I cover what I was supposed to cover with you?
Yes.
Great. Okay, any questions of the four panelists?
That's great.
Okay, this is the second time that we've had something on Aspire because I think it's such a great program. And I like seeing that Tualatin High School is on here now, where I think, I don't know if it's a fairly new one, but they weren't a couple of years ago when we did this, they weren't on there. But just kind of some observations on this is I think you really had high school kids nailed in the sense of, you know, freshmen aren't necessarily looking for, what do I want to be when I grow up? No. Or the idea of, oh, I have to meet this deadline. I'm not quite sure they comprehend what
they're thinking
deadline
about the football
is.
Game.
Other than the fact of, oh, I might get a lower grade if I don't turn the paper in. But I thought that was good. And, you know, I was a former high school teacher, any high school or middle school or whatever teacher say, it just takes one person when it comes to doing this. But there's so many kids now that have never, the idea of going to college or to trade school or to community college or whatever is just not in their minds whatsoever. And so when you've got somebody like, you know, Representative Springer that will go through and bring people in and say, yeah, you can do this, or mom die, let her die, and say you can do this, that's all it takes for these kids to all of a sudden go through. And then when you see the results, it's very heartwarming because you see that this is a child. And the one thing I love is in your packets is where it is. Mm-hmm. And I think it's great that especially it's more in the rural areas where some of these kids go, oh, well, you know, I'll never leave Harney County or Mulhewer County or whatever it is. Not that I'm picking on those two counties. But they do go through and see that there is another world out there. And so I think it's just a great program. Okay, any other questions or comments?
Can I say one more thing?
Yes, you may. Absolutely.
So one of the hearings we had several years ago, because we were doing a fair amount of work with Aspire, maybe in 13 or something, mm-hmm. 13 session, one of the things that came up, and you may have covered it, and I'm sorry I was late, I was in another meeting that I couldn't get out of, talked about districts that have pulled out of Aspire. And so I asked the question, I said, why in the world would you pull out of Aspire? You get free help. That it helps, if for no other reason, self-serving, maybe get your graduation rate up. Mm-hmm. Why in the world would you do that? And so the folks testifying went back, collected some data and brought it back. And one of the reasons, a significant reason, was some superintendents and or principals, depending on the structure of the school district, voiced that it was after high school wasn't their responsibility.
Mm. Really?
And I'm not ashamed to call that out. I am ashamed, but I'll call that out. We're doing something wrong if we think the diploma is the finishing line. Mm-hmm. That's not the finishing line. That's a starting line. Yeah. For life. And so that's what I like about it. It supports you while you're doing your mission, which is to get your kids to a diploma. But oh my gosh, that's just the starting blocks. And this supports the conversation for the rest of your life, which is typically a whole lot longer than the first 18 mm-hmm. years. So yeah, it is our school's job to think beyond the high school diploma.
Okay, are you continuing, Mother Di, or Chad?
So to give you a little bit more background on the programming that we provide for our sites and supports that we provide for both our coordinators, students, and volunteers. So we do provide the online trainings, as Representative Springer had said, and additional resources for our sites. That way they know what they should be doing and working on with their students. We provide an annual conference for all of our coordinators and volunteers. That way they can develop themselves and the knowledge necessary to support the students. as well as spring regional meetings, which I was just in Pendleton for a spring region meeting yesterday, getting together coordinators from that geographic area to come together, share out best practices, what's really working well for them, barriers that they're trying to overcome, and getting best practices from each other. And so they're learning as they're going through the process of being coordinators. We also provide some small partnership grants for our sites, which help offset some of the cost to the districts or to the sites for the coordinator position and other opportunities that they provide for their students. We also provide some resources for the students and families. We'll come to Aspire sites to provide trainings around applying for the FAFSA and applying for the OSAC scholarship application, other grants. I go and present to students and talk to them about how to walk through the OSAC application, which can be daunting. And so we provide that additional support for them. And we also provide some physical resources for them, and some of those are included in your packets here. We've got a student tracker, which outlines activities students should be engaged in throughout their high school career. That keeps the volunteer and the student on track. A volunteer calendar, so that way the volunteers never have a feeling that they don't know what they should be talking about with their students from month to month. And then there's also a planner in there, which goes home and supports the work with the parents. So parents have an understanding of what they should be working on with their students. So I just wanted to provide those for you to take a look at. As Chair Doherty had mentioned, we are spread out geographically throughout the state, representing both very rural areas in the state as well as very urban areas in the state, meeting students. And the program can look slightly different from site to site. We do have some ability for sites to be flexible in how they're implementing the work. But if you take a look at this slide up here, we're able to leverage a lot of community volunteer hours. And so with our budget, as Juan had mentioned, of just around $1.8 million, we're able to leverage that funding to get an additional over $1 million in volunteer time. Mm-hmm. And that's bringing community resources into those sites to support those schools and community-based organizations that host the site. So that's pretty powerful. Last year, we were able to work with quite a diverse array of students, slightly more diverse than high schools throughout the state average, with over 35% students identified as students of color. Over 54% of our graduating seniors were from homes where they had at least one parent who did not attend college. So we feel like we're doing a good job of serving underserved students. We also were able to tout some good achievements with our students, having at least 67% of students apply for at least one scholarship, over 84% apply for financial aid through the FAFSA, and then 92% of our students are planning to either attend college directly out of high school or within 1 year of graduation. So we're pretty proud of those statistics and the students that we're working with, and we feel like we're being effective in that work. Last thing I'll mention, in your packets, we also have our annual report in there from the last academic year with additional information that I won't go over with you today. But you can take a look at that to check out our site information, some lists of our partners that we work with, organizations throughout the state, other survey results from our students, as well as additional student outcomes. And we'll take any additional questions you guys may have at this point.
Any additional questions? Representative Solomon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was curious on the map.
Yeah.
Did you address what it means to be a yellow star, blue star, and some other.
Yeah, so our program, it's a diverse program, so it's primarily, the heart of it is working with high schools and high school sites that serve high school students. We also are in middle schools throughout the state, and so those, or the purple stars are the middle school sites. The yellow stars, we only have a couple of those. Those are our eAspire sites, and that's where volunteers and students work together in a mentorship online in a monitored environment. So there are eAspire sites.
And the blue, I'm sorry, what was
that? The blue are traditional sites, so that's the vast majority of our program.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Follow up. And then can you tell me on average how many hours your volunteers approximately give?
That's
I can answer that question, if that's okay.
Please.
So, for example, I train the volunteer and I leave it up to them. It's their business after that. One-on-one, they meet with the students. For example, during scholarship season, they may be meeting with once a week for an hour with the senior. Juniors, maybe once a month. And younger grades, maybe every other month. That it really depends on the time of the year, the availability of the mentor and the student. Some of our students are very busy. But what I found is that it kind of works out. So it's really up. I have some mentors that mentor one student, some mentor 25 students. So I will take any volunteer and make it work for them so that they can participate in our program.
And just to add to that, so statewide, to give you a sense of the works that volunteers have done, Representative Springer, that 19 is a large number. Our average statewide is about 6 students per volunteer, and average hours is about 50 hours per volunteer per year.
Per year.
Okay. Representative Storm?
Follow up on that. So I'm going to do the students, so the volunteers go through all the background checks just like they do any school volunteer. And is everything done at the school level, like the school site, so they can't, you can't say, okay, you can, you know.
They need to meet at school during school hours.
During school hours.
And usually we meet during one of their class periods because they all leave at lunch or after school.
Okay.
They don't stick around. So we usually
they don't
try to make it work out.
Okay. Okay.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you so very much for the Aspire program. It's a great program, and it's nice to see that, more and more districts are going through and availing themselves of your services. And thank you for what you do. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. With that, I close the informational hearing on the Aspire program. And we're going to do a couple of work sessions. I'm going to open up our work session on Senate Bill 1003A. So if you'd like to explain what it is.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1003A requires school districts ensure that at least one teacher in kindergarten through grade 5 at each school receives training related to dyslexia. It requires the Oregon Department of Education develop a list of training opportunities related to dyslexia. And it requires school districts ensure that every kindergartner or first grader is screened for the risk factors of dyslexia. This bill was last heard on May 3rd. There is a -2 amendment, which was discussed last time, which changes the operative date of Section 1 to July 1st, 2018. There is no revenue impact on the -2, and for the fiscal, a fiscal impact has been issued.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the -2 amendments.
Okay, Representative Wilson moves to adopt the -2 amendments. Is there any discussion? Okay, if not, the amendments are adopted.
And Chair Doherty, I move Senate Bill 1003A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Wilson moves Senate Bill 1003A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Matt, could you read the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Excused.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Representative Bio.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Excused.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes. Do we have anyone that would like to carry this bill on the floor? Okay, Representative Susan McLean, please. Okay, with that, I close the work session on Senate Bill 1003A. And open up a work session on Senate Bill 221A.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, Senate Bill 221A requires teacher training programs to provide instruction on others regarding difficulty as well as dyslexia. It requires educator preparation programs for education to provide instruction on dyslexia and other reading difficulties. It removes the requirement that approved educator preparation programs unable to demonstrate teachers receive training or meeting third grade reading submit a plan to the TSPC, the Teacher Standards Practices Commission. on how to meet such requirements, and it prohibits the commission from denying approval of an educator prep program for failure to comply with the standards or rules adopted under ORS 342147 if the program submits a plan to comply with the commission rules within 1 year of adopting the standards. And it allows the education prep programs to phase in the compliance. There is no revenue impact on that version, and it has a minimal impact on that version of the bill. And this was not an SB 221A. It was just SB 221. Mm-hmm. And the last meeting was May 3rd.
Okay. Thank you.
Chair Doherty, I move Senate Bill 221A to the floor with a two-pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Wilson moves Senate Bill 221A to the floor with a two-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to be supporting this bill, not without some serious consideration, as it's become very apparent this session. I'm talking a lot about don't do new things and mm-hmm. don't change things. That said, as I look at the three bills that we have today, maybe we're doing a little something new, but we're responding to a very pre-existing issue in our schools that needs to be dealt with. So for that reason, I will be supporting the measures.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion?
Oh, the one thing I'll say, actually, so that wasn't a 221A, I apologize. So, yeah, I just corrected it and said it was not an A. It is an A engrossed.
I'm sorry, what?
So I had said that it was not an A. Yeah. It is a 221A, yes. Yeah. Yeah, I apologize for that.
Thank you for the clarification for Representative Wilson and myself. Okay, hearing no other discussion, Matt, could you read the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Excused.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Representative Bile.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Excuse.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes. Do we have a carrier for this motion? Okay, Representative Solman. Thank you very much. Okay, with that, I close the work session on Senate Bill 221A.
Mm-hmm.
221A. Thank you very much. And I open up a work session on Senate Bill 2005A.
205. Thank you, and that's 205. All right, Chair Doherty, I move to adopt.
Okay, can you say that statement?
Oh, wait. Let's back up.
Sorry.
Strike that from the record.
So apologies. There is a dash two amendment.
Oh, yes. Yeah. If you could explain to us what the bill is.
Oh,
we
yes.
We haven't done that. Yes.
Yeah. So Senate Bill 205A, it allows a teacher licensure applicant to teach for 90 calendar days after submitting an application if the person is not ineligible based on the criminal record check and background check. It requires school districts complete review of the employment history of the teacher, declares emergency effective on passage. There is a dash two amendment, A2, which allows TSPC, the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, to collect a fee not exceeding $200 for the issuance of a substitute teaching license, and it requires the fee be paid by the district, charter school, or education service district. There is no revenue impact on the dash A2, and it does have a fiscal impact. Actually, there is a minimal fiscal impact. Let me just confirm that really quickly.
Okay, do we need to talk about this yet? Or just
yeah, and I can talk about that. So there is a fiscal impact statement, and it's a minimal for the A2.
Okay.
And then do you want me to describe that quickly?
Yeah, do you want to describe the
yeah.
weird thing? There's a weird thing, so she's going to describe the weird thing.
So for Senate Bill 205A, there has been a revised fiscal statement. You guys should have that at the dais, and that is available online. So when the original statement was issued for the bill, it was issued, I believe, as a minimal or no impact. There has been a revision where on the original version for the A that passed out of the Senate, that does have a fiscal impact. The version that we're looking at, which is the one we're also going to pass out, is the A for the dash two, which has a minimal impact.
Okay.
And then TSPC is here, and they can talk about that as well, Monica.
Okay. So it had a fiscal large fiscal, and now it does not have a large fiscal.
With the A2, yeah, but the original version that passed out of Senate had no impact, I believe, okay. or minimal.
Okay. So what are we voting on?
Could I ask a question?
Yes.
So
yes.
As I look at the fiscal impact of Senate Bill 205A revised, mm-hmm. The analysis is more about the the loss of revenue to TSPC of $800,000. So is that what we're really talking about here, is the loss of revenue of $800,000?
Dr. Bean, would you like to come up and explain that? So.
Yeah, we're going to adopt.
Yes, we're talking the A2 amendment. So, Dr. Bean, sure. If you could explain how we went from big to little.
Sure. Chair Doherty, Representative Vice Chair Wilson, and members of the committee. This bill is a little interesting. As I testified,
for the record, you are.
For the record, I am Dr. Monica Bean, Executive Director of the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. As in the hearing during my testimony, I said there is a fiscal impact to the agency, but it's the right thing to do for kids. I will stand by that statement. What we did not have available to us was a lot of the data that impacted the revenue. So because of the move to the online licensing system, where we were previously collecting checks and applications by paper, and then we went to the online system in January of 2016, when we went live, the ability for us to collect that expedited application fee ceased to exist. So there was a period of time for which TSPC was not able to collect the expedited application fee. So the original impact that I thought would be to the agency was based on the data on those numbers. We were looking at about $65,000 for this year. Remember, I said there were like 900 and some applications mm-hmm. so far this year, so there was a decrease, which resulted in about $65,000 revenue generated from that. And the prior year, I was looking at a number of about $165,000 generated. But if you looked at the total number of applications that were expedited applications, we were well over 2,000 per year. 2,000 times $149 each exceeded the actual amount of revenue that we did actually collect. So the potential impact on revenue is much higher. If we looked at the total number of applications received and multiplied that by 149, then technically this number is more accurately reflective of that. But keep in mind that because we are processing and issuing licenses so quickly, that generated revenue is going to be lost anyway, because people are not having to pay that expedited fee to get into the classroom more quickly. So our revenue is going to have a negative impact regardless of what this bill does, if that clarifies anything.
Okay. Does that make sense or confusion? Representative Springer.
Could I speak to that a little bit?
Can we ask if we have some more questions of this?
Okay.
So basically what it is the initial licenses are being processed more quickly, therefore you will not have as many expedited licensures.
Chair,
but you
that
will
is
have
correct.
Some.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Now,
so thank you, Madam Chair. So when I was on Ways and Means, mm-hmm. and we've had conversations about this, I'm not on the Ed Sub now, which is fine. Applications were moving extraordinarily fast. That was a process created to bump people to the front of the line, and I believe to make the agency more money. I really do. And if the job is done right and well, and here is where somebody feels almost punitive for doing the right thing, if the job is done the way it should be done and the way I believe the agency is equipped to do the job and has been equipped to do the job, if it's done right and well, you don't need that expedited fee. And so I think we all probably, I do, struggle with an impact of $846,000. It's going to hurt. But I don't think that should have existed in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Chair Doherty.
And disagree, please, if you do.
I don't disagree with you at all. In fact, the amount that you see before you is not was not submitted by TSPC. What I submitted was $260,000, which is what I really think that the actual impact will be, because we are processing much more quickly. So it's going to naturally go down. Regardless of whether this bill passes, we are going to lose revenue generated previously in 2013, 14, 14, 15, and 15, 16 that we did not collect and were not able to collect in most of 15, 16 and half of 16, 17. So that lost revenue still has not impacted our total dollar line. We have some cash available if it's not swept.
Okay, Representative Solman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But the bottom line is this is a savings to teachers.
Chair Doherty and Representative Solman, absolutely. It is the right thing to do for students. The Dash 2 amendment puts back in, because the original bill struck the language that allowed TSPC to collect that expedited fee. But what the Dash 2 amendment does is it puts that back in, but just for those outside of that 90-day or for substitute teachers. Because if you recall, the original intent of the bill is to put a licensed educator in the classroom as opposed to putting a substitute teacher in the classroom. So if a district can't find a trained educator who could be licensed within that 90 days, then certainly they could have the prerogative to put a substitute teacher in there. But it does put the emphasis on getting that fully licensed, professionally trained educator. And then if they want to pay that expedited to put someone in faster because of that emergency situation, they certainly can do that. But there are other options available for emergency teachers, not substitute teachers.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. With that, we'll do this and see if we have any other questions.
Very good.
Representative Wilson.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 205A.
Okay. Representative Wilson moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments. Is there any discussion? Okay. Seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
And Chair Doherty, I move Senate Bill 205A as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Wilson moves Senate Bill 205A as amended to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Matt, could you read the roll, please?
Thank you. Thank you.
Representative
Thank
Evans.
You very much.
Yes.
Representative McClain.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Excused.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Representative
Bile.
Aye. Vice Chair Hernandez.
Excused.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes, and I close the work session on Senate Bill 205A.
Do you have to have a carrier on that one?
Oh, do we have to reopen this?
I don't think so, but it
who would like to carry this?
I'll do it.
Representative Wilson. Okay. With that, we really are closed now. And thank you very much, Gear Up people, for waiting. And so now we're going to open up an informational hearing on Gear Up. Okay, Dana Beck and Stephanie Canahan. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Wilson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stephanie Carnahan. I'm the director of the Oregon Gear Up Program, and with me this afternoon is Dana Beck, our communications specialist. Seeing the hour of the day, I guess we have an hour and 10 minutes to address you. Fantastic. We'll take it. Thank you for joking, for laughing along with me. You know, it's important for us to start with why we do what we do. So I might just ask each of you to reflect for a couple of seconds on why it is that you do what you do. And that'll help you understand the frame of why we're going to talk about Gear Up and why the work that we do is so important. Whether the work you do here as a legislator, or your work you do back home, your work you did maybe as a former teacher, former educator, that's what's important, I think, for the takeaway of our message today about why Oregon Gear Up is so important and why we do the work that we do. And you'll see a little bit about that work as we go along. So we're using a Prezi today, so I apologize for any sort of seasickness, motion sickness that goes along with that. If you're not familiar with it, it sort of zooms in and zooms out like that. So I will try to click slowly to avoid any motion sickness associated with said zooming. So that's just, like I said, why we do what we do to ground us in our work. And Victor here is one good grounding for me about why we do what we do, helping Victor become an engineer someday. This is a picture from what we call a career photo booth, which is a opportunity that schools have to bring us to their schools to have students take a picture with a certificate that essentially says what it is they aspire to be, what they think they want to be when they grow up, back to that conversation, and then we give them information about how to achieve that. So our motto is, or college, it's not a dream, it's a plan. So it really is about helping them find that dream, but then plan for that dream as they go along. But all too often we know that there's a huge gap between opportunity and aspiration. So when we started our most recent grant started in 2014, and so we took a look at our baseline data in the 15 communities we were in. And of the 100% of students that we represent, 92% of those middle school students expected to go to college in the very first year before GEAR Up even began. So those are pretty high expectations, that those students are already thinking about themselves as going to college. Unfortunately, only 44% of the seniors in those classes, in those schools, went to college that year. So we recognize that there's a huge opportunity here for us to help students get from 92% aspiring and wanting to go to 100% in pursuit of the 40-40-20 goal as well. That's a large part of why we do what we do. When we look at sort of the why we have that gap, if you look at college enrollment by income, and I believe this is national data, and this trend has not changed over time. There's a huge gap between the percentage of high income individuals, that's the dark green, and low-income individuals who enroll in college, and that's a problem purely of income. When you control for ability to attend college, the gap is essentially the same. Actually, it's even larger. So students from high-income backgrounds in the lowest quartile of performance go to college at approximately the same rate as students in the highest achieving quartile from low-income backgrounds. So another way to look at that. And then when you add in another factor that we use, or that we are familiar with within Oregon GEAR Up, and that's the rural versus urban. We have chosen to focus our work in rural communities. You'll notice on the list that you have in the map that we are exclusively a rural program at this point. We've been a mix of both, but a couple of grants ago decided to focus our work in rural communities for a large number of reasons. This is one of them. So when you look at the educational attainment in urban versus rural environments, you understand why our work is so important. So in an associate's degree, there's a 10-point gap and an 11-point gap with a bachelor's degree or higher between urban and rural students. Wow, did I just start echoing? Sorry. So we understand that college is important for a variety of reasons, right? I mean, we know, and you've talked about this as a committee ad nauseum, so I won't go into a whole lot of detail, but we know that college is important for employment opportunities. We know it's important for the jobs that are being created right now. We know that over 70% of the jobs that are going to be available in Oregon by 2020 will require some education beyond high school, and yet we have about 44% of our students going on to post-secondary education. That's a huge problem. Students, or those of us who go on to obtain post-secondary degrees, earn more money, right? It's a million-dollar decision is how it often gets shorthanded. The decision to go to college will earn you over $1 million more over your lifetime. But maybe more importantly than that, there's a whole lot of statistics about things like happiness, job satisfaction, voter involvement, community involvement, things like that, that people with post-secondary degrees of some kind are more likely to report job satisfaction. During the recent contraction of the workforce, those individuals with education beyond high school were less likely to be laid off or more likely to be employed. So jobs that require some education beyond high school are recession, much more recession-proof as well. So that's just a little bit about why college is important to us. So now I'm going to launch in and talk a little bit about what GEAR Up is. Zooming out. So Oregon GEAR Up, of course, everything in education is an acronym, and it stands for Gaining Early Awareness and Readiness for Undergraduate Programs. It was a federal program started in the late 90s, and we have weathered several administrations, and we're doing our best to weather this one. I'll speak to this a little more later, but the current administration had slated a significant cut in the GEAR Up budget federally. It is a federal program, but the The continuing resolution that was just passed actually had a slight increase for GEAR Up, so we're pleased to have bipartisan support in Congress for this program. Our goal, simply put, is to increase the number of low-income students who are prepared to enter and succeed in post-secondary education. Again, it's not just about getting into college, but it's about making sure they're successful once they get there, and we'll speak to how we do that as well. And this is... I suppose you can see that on our map. It's sort of our footprint, if you will. We started in 2002 with our first federal grant that went from 2002 to 2008. We're currently in sort of in two grants. So the green dot, if you can see it there, represents a grant that's just about to end. We partnered with the Ford Family Foundation a couple of years ago. They loved what we were doing so much with Gear Up, and they do so much with their scholarship programs and other things around access to higher education, but they wanted to do more. And so they approached us and said, they wanted to bring Gear Up to 10 additional communities around the state. We said, sure, no problem. It's going to cost you. And we gave them a dollar figure, and they said, that is no problem. We're with you. And so we have been pleased to partner with them for the past 7 years to bring Gear Up to 10 additional communities. And then the blue dot there, I think it's blue. Yes. The blue dot there is the communities that we're in with our current grant that started in 2017, our current federal 14. Grant. 14, sorry. This is 17, isn't it? We didn't just start. 2014. That's why Dana's here, to keep me from tripping up. So that sort of shows our footprint across the state in terms of the specific Gear Up programs. We also offer a variety of programs for all schools, and we'll talk about those in our statewide initiatives. We recognize that we have a pretty good thing going with the Gear Up program, and we've developed some resources and some tools that all schools can access. And so with that 2014, we entered into 16 communities and 54 different schools in those communities. So I'll talk a little bit more about how that works as well. We start with the middle school when the students are in seventh grade, and we follow them through their first year in college. The feds recently allowed us to have that gap between high school and college because we recognize that that's a huge gap in the pipeline, is when students make that transition from secondary to post-secondary, so we're now able to follow them into their first year in college. Last year, we served about 9,000 students in grade 7 through their first year in college with our Gear Up schools, and then another 6,000 or so through our statewide initiative. So pretty big impact across the state, and you'll start to learn a little bit more about that as we go. So really, when we're talking about Gear Up, we're talking about changing cultures. And we do that through how we help students succeed is through what we call our sort of theory of change, our research-based model, which really does draw upon a lot of different research to tell us what works in increasing the number of low-income students who are prepared to enter and succeed in college. And so we have distilled a lot of the research for the past several years into these five R's, if you will, reaching higher, rigor, relevance, relationships, raising awareness. And that's our 5R model. So that's our theory of change, our sort of the framework, if you will, that we ask our schools to engage in changing their cultures. And then if you look at sort of the things around the outside of the circle, that's the how, if you will. So the point of the star are the what that we ask schools to focus on, and then the how are some of the things that we do to support them. So, for instance, leadership. We recognize that a school cannot rise above its leaders. And so we do a lot with our principals and superintendents to help them also understand the unique challenges faced by low-income students and ways that they can improve their schools. We do professional development for educators, administrators. You'll see some evidence or see some of our use of data. All of our all of our sort of outcomes have data points that we look at to see how we're doing, and we encourage our schools to do the same thing and make sure that they're using data in making their decisions. Partnerships are huge for us, and I'm glad you heard from Aspire because they're an important partner for us, and you'll hear a little bit more about some of those. We also give our schools money, and I think it's important to note that of those schools that we work most closely with, they get between $40,000 and $55,000 a year to implement Gear Up strategies. The feds are really picky about making sure that that's not supplanting things that they're supposed to be doing, so that's supplementing. So we can't hire a math teacher, for instance, but we can supplement the work that math teacher is doing, and that's the flexible resources. So now, if you will, I'm just going to sort of whip us through the five R's. I'm going to hit on a couple of the first two, and then Dana's going to talk about a couple others. So one of the things we came to understand really quickly is that having high expectations is really important, but we need to focus on it. It's not enough to say, oh, we've got to have high expectations, but we actually have to do programming around it. And we know that when students have educators who believe in them, When teachers have high expectations for students, students increase their self-esteem, their self-confidence, and their academic performance improves as a result of that. So that's one aspect of reaching higher, is making sure that our educators have extremely high expectations of our students and that it's appropriate for their level of achievement. We don't expect everyone to go to Stanford or Harvard or U of O or Chemeketa Community College. We expect students to go to the right institution that's the right fit for them academically, socially, financially, but that we recognize that we need to bust open as many doors for those students as we can. And that's making sure that we have high expectations for them. They have high expectations of themselves, and we'll see a little bit about how we've changed that. As I said, 92% of them already expected some form of post-secondary education, so it's a little hard to go from 92 to 100, but it's really focusing on educator expectations is a large part of what we've done. So some examples of how our schools do that. Sweet Home High School was one of our first schools to have what they call College Signing Day. So for athletes, it's a big deal when they sign with a college, that there's the media comm, and it's a big hoo-ha. So we decided, and Sweet Home decided, well, let's have a big hoo-ha for all of our students, no matter where they're going, and celebrate their achievements after secondary education. So the students get their picture made, a certificate, and there's a picture in your slides of this, actually. We had to cut down some of our slides. But there's a picture of this in the slides we provided for you that shows just that excitement that students have. And mm-hmm. So now it's actually a national thing. Michelle Obama started really focusing on Decision Day. May 1st is the decision deadline for most colleges and universities, and so now it's a national celebration. And in Oregon, we've joined that, and we've had Decision Day just recently. Just last May 5th was the official Decision Day, and a number of our schools had activities that celebrate and help younger students see what the older students are doing. We have older students, when they're graduating, walking through the elementary school in their robes, right, to talk so that the younger kids see, wow, that can be me someday. And the teachers go, I never thought he would graduate. But that's about high expectations and making sure that all of our students are reaching for the stars. And this is just one quick statistic to show a little bit about how when you see the parenthetical statement there, Ford, this is data from our Ford-funded schools. And so when we look at the percentage of students who expect to complete either a 2 or 4 year degree, we've broken that down by middle performing, underperforming, and then students with no family exposure to college. And you can see over the 6 years, this was actually from year one to year five, so 5 years, there's been an increase in all of those categories. And most notably, the students that are sort of underperforming students, that's where we see some of the biggest gains. And so we are helping students, all students, recognize and have high expectations for themselves. A partnership that we have here, we partner with an organization called Seeds Training to help students sort of with their own growth, social-emotional learning and growth, so that they begin to see themselves as college material. It's important to sort of think about how we ask questions of students. I think there's an expectation. If we say, how many of you want to go to college versus how many of you expect to go to college? And many of these students don't have families who have gone to college. They don't have family members, parents, siblings. So they may not actually see themselves as college material. They may say, yeah, I want to, but maybe I don't really see myself as that. So it's helping them create a college-going identity as well. So we partner with Seeds Training to do some of that work throughout the 6 or 7 years that we're with the students. Just an example of one of our partnerships. So continuing our path around this circle here, rigor, right? Academic preparation is probably the single most important thing we can do to help ready more students for success in college. And the research says that students who take challenging classes in high school are much more likely to attend college. And so we are not simply a rah-rah college program. We're very much about changing the academic curriculum in the schools that we work with. So some examples of that are professional development for educators, adoption of new curriculum, bringing in new technology, dual credit, making sure that our teachers are being certified to be able to offer those dual credit courses, things like that. But lots of professional development for educators. Last summer, we offered a 4-day seminar on curriculum alignment between secondary and post-secondary, because there's a huge gap that students graduate with all the math credits that they need, but they're enrolling in a lot of remedial courses. So where's that gap, and how can we identify that gap and do some alignment around the curriculum? That's one example of some of the professional development that we've offered there. And we're starting a new partnership with the College Board to even do more with some of the testing data that we get. This is sort of looking at some of our testing data and the gains in our performance. Again, the Ford schools, just because we're almost through with that grant. We have 5 years of data to look at, and you can see that we've closed the gap with Ford schools and the statewide percentages in a lot of areas, and seen growth in all but language arts. And this, I should point out, is only 2 years of data, because remember we changed the yardstick changed in 2014 with the Smarter Balance, and went away from Oak. So you know, our lens got a little different when we lost the ability to do longitudinal analysis. But we are seeing that, yes, as a sort of a benchmark, we are seeing gains in our academic performance among our students as well. So with that, I think I'm going to turn it over to Dana to talk about the next three R's.
Would you like some water, Stephanie?
Sure, thank you.
Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Wilson, and the committee, my name is Dana Beck, and I'm the communication specialist for Oregon Gear Up, and I'm going to go delve a little more deeply into our model. So coming back out and moving on to relevance. So this is all about career exploration, helping students figure out what they might want to do. We talked a little bit about that with Aspire, and then connecting it to the education they will need, because the research says that high school graduates who expect they will need a college degree for the career they are interested in are more than 6 times as likely to earn bachelor's degrees. So this is all about helping students to understand the bigger picture, helping them to have a plan. And this looks different in schools in a lot of different ways. Career fairs are a common option, job shadowing. One of our school's Powers, which if you don't know where Powers is, it's a super teeny tiny town, graduating class of about 15 seniors every year.
That's a big year.
That's a big year.
We have teenier and tinier town, but it's pretty tiny.
Just for scale, since yes. I know many of you are from the metro area. And they started a program called Pizza with Professionals. So they bring in professionals who are either alumni of the school or local to the area, and once a month they provide pizza, and the professionals talk about their career and how they got there and the obstacles they had to overcome, because we know, especially in rural areas, students are not necessarily seeing a lot of options for mm-hmm. careers, especially ones that require education. So it's important for them to get that broad vision of what is possible, and that it doesn't necessarily follow a linear path. And so seeing it from people they know, that's really important. And one of our partners is Oregon CIS. The Oregon Career Information System is a great program that does a lot around career exploration. Many of our schools use that program to really do the sort of curriculum in the schools to understand about what it means to explore careers. So relationships.
Okay, we're going to have to speed it up a little bit.
Okay.
Okay. One more.
Thank you.
So relationships, you heard a lot from Aspire about the importance of relationships, and we know that. And we know that it's more than just adults. We also know that parents are critically important, as well as peers. So we know that building those near-peer relationships between middle school and high school students and among classes, as well as reaching out to parents, is really critically important. And all of our schools do that in some fashion or another, either through workshops, they'll have the Aspire program, they'll create near-peer mentoring programs, things like that. And we've especially seen gains in how educators are involved in terms of how much they are spending on college and career readiness activities. And again, building that college-going culture throughout the entire school to serve all students, because we know those relationships are so important. And then finally, raising awareness, right? So making sure that students understand the cost of college, understand mm-hmm. how to get there, the deadlines, right? It all comes down to making sure you fill in those forms on time. And so we know that that is so critical. So there's a lot of work done with students, families, in the college application process, the financial aid process. And we, as one of our statewide initiatives, we help organize the College Application Week events that serve over 100 schools, high schools throughout Oregon. And this shows just a little bit of the growth of that program. So this past year, we served over 7,000 seniors, really giving them time and space and support during the school day to fill out college applications, because it's amazing what trips kids up on the applications. applications, college applications will say things like surname, and people are like, I don't know what that is, I'm done.
Yeah.
But if you have somebody there who's there to answer questions, they're much more likely to actually complete the application. So that's again, a really important piece. Stephanie also mentioned about how we're really focusing on college fit. We have a partnership with the Oregon Alliance of Independent Colleges and Universities, really exposing our rural low-income students and educators to our private college options, Willamette University right here, as well as several of the other private not-for-profit colleges in the state, and giving them opportunities to learn about what might be the best fit for students.
Yeah, you might note the Ed Week edition that just came out this week has a huge spread on our partnership with the Alliance.
It must be in the mailbox because we haven't gotten it yet.
It just came.
I haven't gotten Ed Week yet.
Just came out this week. So, again, that is the full framework of what we do, how we do it. It's really meant to be a full-scale model of change, of culture change, that will be sustained after the grant is over, because we only get to work with schools for 6 or 7 years. That sounds like a long time, but it's actually, culture change takes much, much longer than that. But, again, we really rely on partnerships to build that framework for support for future success. Do we have time for a three-minute video to hear from
Actually,
educators?
If we could just kind of go to questions, because I told the committee we'd only meet till 4.
Okay.
So we had only 10 minutes when we started.
Okay. Any questions? Representative Solomon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had two questions. One was about financial literacy, and the other is about Jill. So say Jill comes to you and says, I want to be an electrician. And this is very much a program that's geared towards college. But obviously there's opportunities for apprenticeships and trades and things like that. So what happens to Jill in your program? And then also on the financial literacy part of it, we talked about this in higher education workforce development. The concerning where the college planning is there and they understand financial aid and get that. The problem is there's just not more of an in-depth look at, you know, yes, your college tuition is deferred until you finish, but if you made this payment every month, you would reduce your debt by this much. So there's an opportunity where you have these, you have this audience that you could go really in depth with people, and there's a $1.4 trillion national college student loan debt that we hold here in this nation. So opportunities for, you know, students to reduce that. So I'm kind of curious about just those.
Okay.
Chair Doherty, Representative Solomon, I'll address at least the first question to Jill, and we sort of had to cut this out for time as well, but our motto, college is not a dream, it's a plan, we usually do an asterisk after college and say college is any type of post-secondary education or training, right? And it's all about finding the best fit for students. So we just recently had our planning conference, and we had Gabby Nunley come from ODE and Bully to talk about apprenticeship programs, because that is an area that a lot of our schools and students are interested in and mm-hmm. don't know very much about.
And military as well.
Yeah.
Military has an amazing electrician
The full range of options is what we're encouraging. We use college as sort of a shorthand, and we know that trips people up because when we're like college, and we have to remind folks that we're talking about having a plan. Any sort of post-secondary education or training.
Okay.
Which post-secondary education doesn't really trip off the tongue, so that's why we've stuck with college as sort of the shorthand for that. And the feds are pretty clear that it is some form of post-secondary education, so not military in the for the federal Gear Up funding. Mm-hmm. Military does not count in their definition of post-secondary education. The schools do, right? The military and academies certainly do, but simply enlisting in the military doesn't, even though there are training programs often associated with that, the way the feds sort of our feet are to the federal fire, and that doesn't include the military specifically. You know, as to financial literacy, Representative Solomon, Chair Doherty, we don't actually have a curriculum, and that's part of the beauty of this program, is that each of our 31 communities has very different issues that they face. Some of them have financial literacy programs built in that they're using. Others are, we partnered with the National Education for Financial Education, NEFI, and they have a financial literacy model that we make available. So that's a large part of what we do is make available resources to our schools and help them know what's out there and available, because there is just so much. And so we've really done a nice job, I think, of cataloging a lot of the resources that are out there already, and some of the curricular pieces do exist. We also work with a couple of the community development organizations to do IDAs, individual development accounts for college, to help students pay for their college degrees, and that has a financial literacy component required when they're in those savings programs. And the savings are matched at 5-to-1 or 3-to-1, depending on the program, and anytime they're saving, they're engaged in a financial literacy training about what it means to save for college and how to pay off those college loans. So that's a couple of examples of a curricular piece.
Thank you. Other questions? Did you have a question? Okay, we still have a couple more business things.
You were here during the Aspire presentation that we saw a little bit earlier. Is there overlap between your two programs?
I think the overlap, Representative Viles, Chair Doherty, is in the relationships arm of our STAR, if you will. That, as they talked about, is really important, and we recognize that, and the research says that. Like I said, this is research-based, and so we recognize that Aspire has a huge role to play in helping to establish those adult-to-student relationships, and that's a large part of it. So that, I think, that's the overlap, if you will. We focus on a whole lot of other things as well, like the AP and the dual credit. So that's, I think, why that partnership is really important, so that we can use Aspire as an example of creating mentoring opportunities for students.
Okay, any other questions? I do appreciate the rural emphasis on this, because I think sometimes we forget those, and that is something that's very important, because they don't see a lot of the things that maybe the urban kids see every day when it comes to jobs and schools and everything else.
So I really
appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Hey, anything else? Okay, thank you so much for your time.
I have not heard of this program before,
and I'm very, very impressed.
We'll come back again. Thank you.
Okay, with that, I close the informational hearing on Gear Up, and I'm going to reopen up. Mm-hmm. I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 205A. Okay, and this is all me. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended to allow Representative Parrish to vote on Senate Bill 205A. It will not change the outcome.
205A.
What did I say? Senate Bill 205A.
Sorry.
Will not change the outcome. Is there any objection? Okay, hearing none. Rep. Parrish, how do you vote?
Yes. Aye. Sorry, I have no voice. Aye.
Okay. Thank you.
Shout.
Okay, with that, do I have to close it? I close the work session on Senate Bill 205A and open up a work session on Senate Bill 221A. Chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended to allow Representative Parrish to vote on Senate Bill 221A. Will not change the outcome. Is there any objection?
No.
Oh, okay. Hearing very little. So, Orton, Representative Parrish, how do you vote?
You can't make me laugh and cough like that. Aye.
Okay. Thank you very much. With that, I close the work session on Senate Bill 221A, and I open up a work session on Senate Bill 1003A. The chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended to allow Representative Parrish to vote on Senate Bill 1003A. It will not change the outcome. Is there any objection?
No, I guess we're okay.
Okay. Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Parrish, how do you vote?
Aye.
Okay, she votes aye. So with that, I close the open work session on Senate Bill 1003A. Now, a couple of things. We don't have committee on Monday and Wednesday, because Senate bills have not been coming over. But on Thursday, we had scheduled the field trip at 12:30 to the Career Tech Center out in Salem.
Okay.
And if you haven't been out there, it's a phenomenal facility. And so it's out on Portland Avenue. We can get carpool if you want. Your legislative assistants are more than welcome to this. But it's a great program, and I think you guys will be very impressed. So make sure you let Alethea know.
What's the time frame? 12:30 to 2.
Because the kids are gone by then. Okay, anything else? That's it. Committee adjourned. Thank you. Thank you. Committee adjourned.